come on.
Let's talk about sex, baby. Let's talk about you and me. Let's talk about all the good things and the bad things that make me. Let's talk about sex. Let's talk about sex.
Shemales in prom dresses. Twilight / Edward and Jacob. Black Meat on White Street. Wives Caught Cheating on Cam. Best romance novels with alpha heroes. Kendra Wilkinson sex tape. Spanking Stories. Free Gay Video Tube. Jake Gyllenhaal without shirt. Girls Gone Wild orgies. Jersey Shore sex cartoons. Hello, this is Catherine Devaney. Welcome to Let's Talk About Sex, which is part of Stay On Your Flower, coming to you from the People's Republic of Moreland here at the Atheist Kibbutz. Is it art or is it porn? No, it's porn. And that's what we're going to be talking about today. I'm here with Siddhi Darnell, sexologist, sex therapist, sex educator, and founder and creator of Pleasure Salon Melbourne. And we are going to talk about porn. Now, I'm reading from a book and... You're reading a book on porn at the moment. There's been a lot of porn books come out. Gail Dines' book, there's Pornland, The Porn Report, and you're reading A Billion Wicked Thoughts. Now, that's the one I haven't read but most interests me. So tell me about this.
Okay. So A Billion Wicked Thoughts is written by two folks whose gender actually escapes me, Oggy Ogas and Sai Gadam. I don't know a whole lot about them. But basically, they, over a period of 4 years, they tracked the usage of people search keywords into various search engines from the internet, and they have literally compiled a list of a billion search topics that people look for and have written a book explaining what it is that people search for, and then they've given their particular angle on why they think people are looking for those things and drawn some conclusions about it. I think their insights are incredibly profound, and particularly, you know, there's a lot of sex positivism going on in the book, but what's particularly amazing is actually the variety of stuff that people are looking for when it comes to their own personal erotica, that it's not just all about blonde hair, big tits and big cocks. There's a really, really big variety of stuff that people are looking for from the privacy of their own
Tell
laptops.
Me what stood out to you. What can you remember that made you go, whoa?
Well, the thing that I, on a personal level, I was thrilled about was older, voluptuous women.
Yes.
That made me very happy.
Well, I remember reading about A Billion Wicked Thoughts that came out. I'm fascinated by the porn discussion. My kids go, oh, Mum, you're really weird. You always say, you know, sex is great and fun and fabulous and as long as it's safe and consensual, but all the other parents are saying it's bad and it's dangerous. And reading this, I just thought in the media, the discussion about porn is absolutely polarised. For as many people saying consumption of porn makes no difference and maybe it's slightly positive in people's lives, to people saying it's bad, it's wrong, we've got to get rid of all of it, it's just terrible. And somewhere in the middle is a truth. Now, A Billion Wicked Thoughts is quite sex positive and it's been slammed for its research methods.
Yeah.
One of the things that prevents really good and solid research on porn and sex and anything like that is the constraints of the traditional research methods.
Absolutely, because people who are willing to be subjects in research, it's hard to determine exactly how honest they're being when they are giving the information themselves, even if they understand that it's anonymous. To what degree can we trust that they're being entirely honest about it? Whereas the way that the authors of this book went about it was actually recording the keywords that were used in search engines over 4 years, and these are then completely unfiltered. And we don't know necessarily the demographic of where they're coming from, genders, age groups, countries, that kind of thing. But what we do get is a real snapshot of the human psyche over 4 years in terms of desire, sexual desire, and the things that they come up with.
I remember reading praises of it, and I really want to read that book when you're finished. Might even go down and get myself a copy today. Was MILFs, Mothers I'd Like to Fuck, which is, you know, older, voluptuous women, were in the top five. Also, cheating wives was a much bigger proportion of the searches than people thought.
Yeah.
You can talk about the psychological reasons behind this, but it wasn't big cocks, big tits, blonde hair, you know, Pamela Anderson. Very varied and not traditionally what we would assume is the big thing
is actually not the big thing.
And why we're assuming it is because there are certain kinds of sexualities and ways of experiencing sex and pleasure which are considered okay and other ones are considered not okay. Like we've talked about heterosexual pegging and, you know, anal stimulation of men in straight sex and stuff like that. And there are things that
people would go, well, that's normal. Well, that's not normal. It's all normal, you know.
Yeah,
and
well,
it's all fine.
And this book certainly is starting to confirm really how much diversity there is in human sexuality. And I think for that reason alone that this book is a real breakthrough in getting us to really confront exactly what the potential of human sexuality is, that it's not just what we have been taught that it is. And again, this is where comprehensive sex education comes into it, that you know, younger people, older people, all of us need to understand that sex is not just between one man and one woman and sticking it in. There's a whole lot
more going on. And
it's
not just about disease and pregnancy. Mm. This is a really hot topic at the moment.
Yeah.
Porn is particularly hot. The discussion about, is it bad for us? Is, you know, mostly we're hearing it's bad, it's bad, it's bad. Mm. And my kids said, I think they knew the answer before they asked this question. They said, was there porn before the internet? And that's one of the things that really bothers me about these porn discussions,
yeah.
Suggesting that porn's only been around since the internet, number one, that creepy sexuality and dysfunctional sexuality has only been around since the internet and because of porn.
Mm.
And also that porn is the only thing which has ever shaped our sexuality. Like,
yeah.
I was having this big discussion with a friend of mine about porn because I really don't have any, it's safe and consensual. And of course, like some people, some people will take it a bit too far. I know people who've had addictions to porn and addictions to sex.
And it's been horrible.
There's always going to be people like that. But there was always people like that before. And yes, we have it in our hands and, you know, in our laptops and in our iPads. And it's everywhere around, but we have to develop an evolved response to that in the same way that we have to develop an evolved response to the fact that we live in a society in Australia and in first world countries where food is so readily available, it's making many of us obese, and our access to a sedentary lifestyle. You can sit in your house and get your internet piped in and your food brought to you, and our access, I think that we're getting quite obese on information and quite obese on porn, not all of us, but I don't think it's necessarily a bad thing. Like before then, I mean, the porn that I've watched, and I haven't watched a heap of it, and I've watched it in a lot of different ways, I found generally hilarious, entertaining, liberating, and educational.
Yeah.
And if we're talking about comprehensive sex education, this is such a hot topic at the moment. Kids who get their sex education from school, and a lot also if they're getting it through their churches and through their parents, all they know about is pregnancy and disease.
Mm.
They don't know about any of the pleasure.
Well, often the pleasure is one of the things that is left out. I mean, it is starting to change a little bit in terms of some of the more progressive high schools are teaching, bringing a little bit of that into the curriculum.
So what kind of, what kind of stuff are they bringing in?
Well, they're looking at certainly ways of helping the students learn how to communicate better. They're learning about how to being encouraged to understand their own bodies a little bit better and understand what feels good and how to ask for things and how to say no, I think, is one of the really big things that youngsters are learning about at school. But not all schools are open to having discussions about pornography, particularly with their older students.
And it's
talking
crazy.
About students who are sort of year 10 and above.
And they're talking about this is terrible, this is disruptive.
So the information that they get is don't watch it, porn is bad, which is one perspective. They're entitled to give that opinion. But I think as educators, we are ethically obliged to cover all bases and then allow the students to make an informed decision when they have all the information given to them. And when you provide only one side of an argument, you're not fulfilling your role as an ethical educator to provide all the information.
But also, there's that thing with teenagers too. I have a funny feeling that perhaps school and parents is not where we should be sex educating, because kids like that subterranean. They like that. It's like you don't want to sit down and ask your mum, how do I frig off my girlfriend or, you know, give my boyfriend a head job? It's actually something that you want to do elsewhere. You want to go down a little rabbit burrow
on
your own.
And people like the subterranean. I'm not suggesting that high school teachers sit and make their kids watch porn in the classroom. That's not at all what I'm suggesting.
No, and that's not what it sounds like.
No.
But I think that, like, when I was at school, I remember we learned clear thinking.
Mm.
And clear thinking was basically learning how to critically pull apart an article or a statement or anything and go, where is this person coming from? What is the vested interest this person has? What are the things that I'm missing out on here? Is this representative of what everybody thinks or says? And the other thing was, I remember doing at Reservoir High, was consumer education, you know, talking about ads and talking about images on television and in movies and how they're used to manipulate you and how they might give you an idea that there might be only one way that, you know, that if you look at Australian television, they're basically white, straight, you know, able-bodied, believe in God, you know, it's... it's not a fair representation of our society. Not, yeah. And I think that with porn, if we're teaching that in schools, what we've got to say is there's lots of different types and you've got to have a look at how this was made, why this was made, by who. Like exactly that the anal sex thing comes up a lot, that that you know, we talk about the courtesy finger, that people having sex for the first time who are not, you haven't had a lot of experiences, might just think, well, you can just, it's just this great big round hole and you can just shove something in, because what they've seen is footage of people who've been having sex for hours. They may have taken drugs to dilate. They may have had various things in and out of their anuses before you've, it just looks like suddenly bang, you know, it's just open like the lid of a Vegemite jar. Yeah. And so it's putting it in perspective and seeing what it is, and teaching kids that just because you see it on porn doesn't mean that it's right for you or and right the all the time.
The other thing too is that a lot of professional porn people, they're like stunt people. They're paid athletes almost who are very, very skilled in particular things that you wouldn't necessarily be able to do at home by yourself without a lot of preparation. And highly paid porn professionals in mainstream porn are really very skilled at the particular things that they are into, and that's what they get paid for.
I think that it's normal for people, and particularly teenagers, to be fascinated by the extremities of human experience. I mean, where else are they seeing how to do this? I mean, it's such a scary thing. I'm suddenly naked. I'm with this naked person and I've got to do this. There is a huge lacking in our education and our attitude towards sex. Like particularly, I just think that we are so uptight, particularly the heterosexual community. Where did you get your sex education when you were starting out?
I think I remember seeing porn when I was sort of in my late teens with my friend at the time in high school, and we used to go and sneak her older brother's stash of magazines that we knew where they were in his bedroom, and comparatively, compared to the porn that is available now, they were very, very tame. But it was fun, and it was a really exciting way to sort of to learn about. That was the first time I had seen anybody else's pussy, and it was the first time I had really, I suppose, taken an interest in sex that was beyond an interest in myself, that actually understanding what other people looked like and what other people did. And then when I hit my very early 20s, I think when I was about 19, 20, I discovered Annie Sprinkle, and my whole life changed pretty much at that point. And it was from that point and meeting also Barbara Kareles that I have become the person I am today.
Tell us about Annie Sprinkle and Barbara Kareles.
Annie Sprinkle was a porn star in the 1970s in New York, and she then went on in the 80s with Barbara Kareles to do a lot of activist work around the AIDS crisis. And then in the 90s, which is when I met Barbara, and Barbara and Annie were working together touring the world with one of Annie's live shows, which was called Post Porn Modernist. It was one of the first times, to my knowledge, that I had seen a theatre show that was travelling the world that was not only informative and funny, but it was also sex educational, and it featured Annie Sprinkle on stage recounting her history as a porn star. And I think at that point she had made, I can't remember, hundreds and hundreds of films, and gave a lot of amazing statistics of if she had put all of the cocks that she had sucked end to end, it would be as tall as the Empire State Building, and the amount of buckets of ejaculate that she had swallowed, and all of these astounding statistics, which were at the time shocking for me to hear, but also incredibly engaging. And I couldn't understand why I was so fascinated by this woman that society was telling me I probably shouldn't respect, and she certainly shouldn't be a role model for a young woman. But for me, she was fascinating. So that was sort of how that started. And then Barbara Kareles is now an author and sex educator around alternative sex practices. Kink and Tantra is her main modalities. And I had the pleasure of meeting Barbara about 20 years ago, and she and I are great friends now, and she travels the world teaching and lecturing about sex and sexuality and the importance of sex and sexuality as well.
How much of people's interest in porn is educational?
I think education is a byproduct of porn. I don't necessarily think that people go looking for porn because they want to get educated necessarily. I think they're curious. And within that curiosity, they're open to learning something.
But I think people want to see what's normal and what's available.
Absolutely, but that's what I'm saying about that curiosity, as opposed to I'm going to learn how to I don't know that they actually go into it wanting to find absolute specific answers, but they are curious. They want to see what other people are doing. They want to see what possibilities there are or what options there are. And while we live in a society, particularly in Australia, where sexually explicit conversation is often frowned upon, that there's not many places
it's
that you
totally
can go
frowned upon.
To have conversations about sexuality, which is one of the reasons I started Pleasure Salon Melbourne, because I wanted to create a space where people could come and have open and honest conversations about sexuality, learn something, and not feel ashamed about their desire to want to find out more.
That's why I wanted to do these as well. I wanted people to go, oh, it's not just me, and how do you do it? And a lot of people are a bit too shy to even punch the question into the search engine. And I just want people out there to know there's lots of different kinds of normal. And I was listening to a podcast and a woman was saying, you know, that she'd opened up her daughter's emails and found a picture of a guy had sent her of a cock and talking about them as dirty pictures and creepy things and stuff. Yeah, it was inappropriate. It may not have been inappropriate for this guy to send a picture of his cock. She may have said, can you please send me a photograph of your cock? I like to play with myself and it, you know, turns me on. But the word like dirty and wrong and creepy, but you do hear that a lot. Like one of my kids asked me, and again, they knew the answer, you know, is porn bad? And I said, it's like everything, you know, as a part of a balanced diet, in moderation, ethical, safe,
some
consensual.
There is some porn around that's really, really unpleasant, that is particularly unappealing to women and men. And I think often what is overlooked is that a lot of people are saying that a lot of pornography can demean women through a lot of the acts that they do. And while I agree to it, that can be true, there are a lot of men who also find that really demeaning for men to be in these situations where they're behaving this way around women, that a lot of men find that equally as shocking. So the idea that it really encourages men and demeans women, I think, is a fallacy. I think that unimaginative and uncreative porn that is really demeaning to all genders is watching these people humiliate each other without consent, without any element of pleasure. And that's not just demeaning to women, that's demeaning to men as well. It's demeaning to humans, and that's not what this is about.
No, there is fantastic porn out there that a lot of us really enjoy. Like I read recently, like 100% of men, Australian men, have looked at porn, and they said 1 in 3 Australian women are regularly consuming illicit images of porn and having a lovely time, finding it educational, informative, hilarious, whatever.
And it's interesting to note that some of the most progressive porn sites in the world are actually coming out of
Australia,
which is fantastic. We can really get behind and support.
It's amazing because we're not seeing that reflected in the media. Like people say, oh, it's demeaning and humiliating, you know, talking about, you know, porn. I'm just thinking, well, what porn are you watching? You can find that anywhere. I find, you know, religion demeaning towards almost everybody. I find mainstream media demeaning to almost everybody, as long as you're not a white, middle-aged, middle-class, straight, Christian, God-fearing man.
The Melbourne International Comedy Festival runs from March to the something to April the something. You guys have got computers. You got the internet. Look it up. I'm too busy and important. Now, if you see one show during the festival, and let's face it, you'll probably see 7, run, don't walk, to see Daniel Burt's Inspired by Mediocrity. Now, you may know him from his work as a columnist in The Age's Green Guide. You may have seen his sellout show Yes Man Syndrome in the 2010 International Melbourne Comedy Festival. And he's a bit shy about it, but he also used to write for David Letterman. No big deal, but he did.
Yeah, look, hey, thanks for having me. And I'm really loving the sex podcast. I'm just learning way too much. It's funny.
It's not like you need an excuse to spend your whole day downloading porn and masturbating.
I know,
now you do.
It was a really good time out from watching porn, actually, listening to that sex podcast.
It's actually a very common and traditional way to write your Melbourne International Comedy Festival show is to stay at home, not write, Google yourself, watch porn and eat cheese
toasties. I just found it really broke up the day. They say, and I believe it, that, you know, you can tell how a guy is in bed by how he goes on the dance floor. And it's true, I think, because, you know, I last about one song.
Show starts at 8:30 at £1,000 Bent Off, Little Lonsdale Street. Runs from April 3rd to April 22nd. Buy your tickets at Ticketmaster or at the door. And for more information, go to danielburt.com.au. Burt as in Reynolds, not as in Newton, if you're after the spelling.
So there is good porn and there is bad porn. And I read something the other day, you know the porn is bad if you're more turned on by the ads than the site that you're watching, which I think is not a bad idea. But people ask me all the time about where do you go to find good porn? And when we say good, what we're talking about is something which is where you're seeing authentic bodies mm-hmm. doing interesting things, sexy stuff that is in often an environment that you might find familiar. We're talking about moving away from the idea of kink, which is all great, mm-hmm. or, you know, hotel rooms or stuff like that, but just stuff that people can relate with, that often there's a bit of chemistry or passion involved. Mm. It could be a couple already in a relationship or threesome or whatever, or a person who is just performing mm. something on their own. Where do you go to find that stuff? And it's not easy.
No, it's not
your
easy.
Take is the good stuff you have to pay for.
That's been my experience, is the quality stuff where there's sort of authentic representations of authentic bodies, of authentic connections and authentic kind of sex acts, as opposed to stunt sex, which mm. is a different thing. In my experience, it's not the free-to-air stuff. It's the stuff that you do have to pay for.
And finding that out, you said that you found out mostly by just talking to people.
Yeah, so certainly in the circles that I move in, I know a lot of porn performers and I know a lot of other sex educators and sex therapists. They're just sort of the people that I tend to gravitate toward. And I, in preparation for this podcast, I did ask them, what do you reckon? What are the good ones? And none of it came up as any of the stuff that's free-to-air. So
what did come up?
Things that did come up, of course, we know that there's FEC based here in Melbourne, and another great Australian one is For the Girls, which is predominantly sort of focused towards women, but obviously men can watch it as well, and they're both locally made. FEC is the company behind Beautiful Agony and I Feel Myself and I Shot Myself, which their point of difference is that all of the contributors, all of the performers submit their own work and they ultimately own their own work and they get royalties each time somebody watches their work, which they like to call themselves ethical porn as a result of that, which different people have different opinions about what's ethical, but that's their angle on it. Another great one is the Crash Pad series, which is made in San Francisco, I believe. And again, it's made by the performers actually also shoot it themselves, but it's more than sort of just one-on-one. It can be a bigger group like that. And Tristan Tormino is also another pornographer who's based in New York, and a lot of her work, she does a lot of sort of what I would call eduporn DVDs that you can buy that are educational as well as sexy and erotic. And just another one that's come to mind is Tony Comstock. He and his partner make a series of porn videos that I've seen a couple of, which I think are just beautiful, actually. They interview the couples before, during and after the sex, and then you're actually watching them having sex as well, and you really are drawn into the chemistry and the connection between them. And they're heterosexual couples, gay male couples and gay female couples.
So are they established couples or are they performer couples?
No, they're established couples. Right, they're okay. Actual couples who consent to being filmed during sex.
And see,
really lovely, because you can feel the chemistry, and because you actually watch them interact in conversation as well as sexually, I couldn't help but feel getting really drawn in by the whole thing.
Well, I think that's what people, when they're asking me, because I'm generally talking about straight people, you know, the gay porn world seems to be fairly big, and I think people are fairly happy with what's going on there. But we did the other day at Pleasure Salon, you had Zach
Ackland,
who was saying that there's not enough diversity in gay porn. Mm. He's a red-haired, hairy guy who is...
And totally gorgeous.
Gorgeous, but really passionate about his performing. Yeah. And it's not just about... I love the way that they talked about the experience of the performer and how, you know, how it you define yourself and how proud they are of their work. And, you know, you hear people saying, oh, you know, porn and sex work, it's all just people on drugs who can't do anything else. That is not the case.
No.
Yes, there are people who are being exploited, but that's a problem with workplace relations, and we should...
Well, there are people working in fast food restaurants who are being exploited.
There are people who are working as lawyers who are being exploited. There are women who are being mothers at home. There are men who are working in companies being bullied and, you know, committing suicide. So you've got to move away from that. You've got to realise that there is a vested interest, that there are people in the media, the powers that be, the government, to keep saying porn is bad, porn is bad. It's going to break your children and it's going to break you. I don't believe it. The most negative impact on my sexuality has been religion and Disney movies. Disney movies, or the kind of the idea of the, you know,
the perfect romance and the perfect body and
absolutely.
The perfect life.
Yeah, I think I that agree. They and people find that very hard to believe, and they think that I'm just saying to be provocative, but I'm absolutely fair dinkum. I would much prefer for my kids to be watching porn than reading the Bible. So if you're watching RedTube or YouPorn, you're not watching good porn. It might be doing it for you and it might be enough, but there's better stuff out there. One of the things that Cindy and I have realised is it's really hard to find these good paid porn sites where you can go.
Or and even good free ones if they're around. We just don't know of
them. We're asking you to comment on the end of this podcast. You'll see that there's a comment section after what I've written on my site. Just go under anonymous or use your name if you like or make up a hilarious name. Tell us some good ones that you know of. So if I was saying to somebody, said, I haven't looked at porn before, I'd like to look at some porn. And also, people use it a lot with their partners now. It's not just something that teenage boys do in their bedroom.
Mm.
Couples pick up the laptop or the iPad before they go to bed. They have a look around at some stuff and then they have a play around. It's a great way to explore your own sexuality and stuff like that. It's also a great way to intellectually challenge yourself about what is being produced and why and what you can see. I think as far as porn on the internet goes, is if you just go for the free stuff and you do a Google search, you're just seeing such a tiny layer. And I've seen porn, but I'm not an aficionado at all. And so the ones that, if somebody said to me what to look at, would be Abby Winters, which is now was Melbourne and it's now moved to Holland. The Fex sites, which are Beautiful Agony.
I feel myself and I shot myself.
Crash Pad. You were saying Tristan Tormino.
Anything by Tristan Tormino.
And
Tony Comstock.
Tony Comstock. Mm-hmm. That sounds... I'll be looking at that tonight. If you guys can think of anywhere that you think is a really good jumping off point for people to start having a look at something, which is not your kind of pack to the rafters sex, the stuff which... You know the stuff that we're talking about. When you think of porn, that stuff. Not that stuff. Other stuff. I think LadyCheeky.com is a really interesting place to go. Occasionally you see GIFs, it's mostly images, but I'm not sure how these sites work. They kind of share images, so there'll be like an image there and then you can click through to where it's from and chances are you might see a whole lot of other things, body shapes, body types, kind of sex that might interest you. And it can be quite a wonderful journey. I tend to get a bit obsessed with these things for a couple of days and then I just kind of go, oh yeah, I've got the hang of it. But there's a lot of really interesting stuff out there to use for your own pleasure, for your own entertainment, for your own amusement, for your own education. On the writing above the podcast, I'm going to link you to some of these things. And I tell you what, if you want to go into the world of porn, LadyCheekyBadPorn.com is the funniest site I've ever seen. And people have contributed the worst pictures of porn, like a guy in a Spider-Man suit masturbating and like a woman wearing like chops and one woman squatting down and weeing onto a turtle. And people just contribute all these pictures. It is funny. It's worth looking at. But
This is the thing too, I think, that we have to remember, that it's important to keep sex funny as well. And it's important to keep sex light, that it doesn't all have to be serious and heavy and that, you know, we can laugh at images of sexuality sometimes, because if they are designed specifically to make us laugh, like a man masturbating in a Spider-Man suit, if that is funny, then that's okay for it to be funny as well.
I just don't think we should degrade people for the choices that they make. There's plenty of sex things out there that I just kind of go, I just can't imagine ever being into that. But I think particularly with kids, I've got a 13-year-old, a 10-year-old and a 9-year-old, and I always talk about it in positive, fun and respectful terms, and we have very open discussions about these things. You know, when people talk about the, oh, and I had to have the talk, we've just always talked about it. It's just a normal part of life, like animals or food or exercise or politics.
Well, I think this is the thing. I mean, we emphasize and we value sleeping. We emphasize and we value eating. These are two really fundamental core components of the human condition. Sex is another one. If you don't eat properly, you get sick. If you don't sleep properly, you get sick. And if you don't do sex well, you'll get sick. So it's really, really important that we can sit and talk about our sleep patterns and our food habits, and nobody thinks less of us for that. But if we sit and discuss our sex habits, apparently we're perverts or kinky or there's something somehow bent or abnormal about us. And I'm campaigning to change that because I would like to see a lot more, not necessarily smutty, but or sleazy, but just open and honest and intelligent conversations about sexuality and the role that sexuality plays in our lives. And the more we demystify it, the more we open up the can of worms, the more we're going to understand it and the less we're going to be freaked out by it.
And I just think there's such ripples, and this came across at Pleasure Salon when we were talking to the porn performers and porn producers. They're just saying this is not just about getting your rocks off. Like being able to live a full, authentic sex life, whether you're in a relationship or not. I mean, there's plenty of people who are single who are having flourishing sex lives on their own, keeping that part of themselves alive and creative and fun and something that fulfills them. It adds to your physical health, to your mental health,
absolutely,
to your connections with other people, to your intellect. It kind of just, when you start, if you start
expanding
looking at porn,
your consciousness, yeah, expanding about the way that you observe the world.
Going, look, oh, that person does it that way. Oh, that person does it that way. And it just makes you, it makes you embrace the world, be more flexible, be more open-minded. And that makes you more open-minded on a whole lot of different levels. My son, who's 10, we started playing Words with Friends for the first time. And so we set up the account and I said, you start. And the first word that he did was dildo. Did I tell you this?
You did tell me this.
I said, what's a dildo? And he said, it's a plastic penis, Mum. And I was thrilled that he knew what it was.
Yeah.
Thrilled that he, amazed he could spell it. But also that he, there was no sense of judgment on what it was. It was just, you know, penises, vaginas, anuses, dildos. You just, it's about touching each other in places that make you, you know, touching yourself or touching other people in places that make you feel good. There's no judgment on what you do. I just don't understand how people can judge that is okay, that is not okay. It is okay to have sex like this. It is not okay to have sex like this. If you're talking consenting adults,
and that's the thing. I mean, it's one thing for people to judge each other, but I see certainly in terms of therapeutically working with people, the biggest critics of sex behaviour is often oneself.
Absolutely.
And people can get really, really, they can really cause themselves a lot of anxiety and a lot of pain and anguish because of the degree to which they judge themselves for the things that they enjoy doing.
Look at
Magda. And so they'll
come
into a therapeutic session with extraordinary anxiety around something that I know is normal, but trying to help them work their way to a point of self-acceptance around that can take a while sometimes because they've had years and years and years of believing that they're somehow damaged when actually they're perfectly healthy.
Oh, the shame. And carrying a secret, not being able to live your whole life authentically. I look at Magda, who, you know, came out this week and, you know, people say it was the worst kept secret in show business, and it's perhaps it's none of our business. My feeling is that if you are not straight and you find yourself in a high profile position, that you have an obligation to fess up about your sexuality and not pretend that it doesn't matter, because it does. And if you have a look at the amount of suicides and depression and dysfunction involved with people who are not being able to live their sexual lives out authentically, you couldn't help but feel an obligation to say, I'm one of you, you know. And so she's done it. And a lot of people have said over the years, saying, well, you know, why isn't Magda coming out? And there's lots of high-profile people like this in Australia, and everybody kind of accepted it but knew. But the relief now she's done it, it's just amazing. And I, you know, she's got a couple of health problems. I saw her at a party just before Christmas. Terrific bird. But she's got a few health problems with, you know, back and bits and pieces and stuff. And I'm really hoping that they just disappear now, because she's not carrying that weight anymore.
Yeah.
She's not carrying that burden. And perhaps people who were not comfortable with the idea of same-sex attraction or anything other than straight, the fact that Magda's been in their living rooms for 30 years and now she's saying, and you know what, I don't do the same things in bed that you do. I don't fantasize about the same things that you do, that perhaps that might break down some walls as
Let's
well.
Let's hope so. And I suppose, again, you know, it's just the more conversation we have about healthy sexuality and diversity, the more we're all just going to be able to sleep better at night, I think.
Or stay up.
Or stay up all night together.
Though I think the point of this one, and we're wrapping up our podcast series with this for now, is that porn is not all
not
bad.
All porn is all bad all the time.
For all people. Like, I mean, anything that you read that says, you know, porn is destroying relationships. What? All porn?
Porn is
all
destroying
relationships,
that all men are bad who watch porn, and that
the internet created
and
porn.
And that all women don't like porn and women don't consume porn and men are bad because they make the porn to these poor, poor women who...
And things are happening with teenage girls that weren't happening before porn and porn was happened before the internet.
And the way that we can get around this, a lot of people are saying, certainly parents of teenagers, what can we do about this porn problem? What we can do is we can talk about it and let's have open, honest conversations with our youngsters about it.
I don't think that teenagers want to talk to their parents about it.
No.
But I do think that what parents can do is model and parents and parents' partners to model
but
good,
what I'm
healthy,
about
respectful sexual relationships with no judgment on any kind of sex or ways of displaying your sexuality.
But
or
in the event that a younger person has actually seen some kind of porn that has actually disturbed them, so if they've seen something that has been particularly graphic or particularly violent that's left them feeling a little bit shell-shocked, that they do have an adult. It doesn't have to be a parent, but someone that they can go to discuss the complexity of how they're feeling about it instead of keeping it in the vault and thinking, I can't talk about this. I can't tell anybody that I just saw this really freaky thing and now I feel really weird about it. I think it's really important for youngsters to be able to access someone, if it's not a teacher or a parent, an older brother or an older sister or someone older than them, that they can just have a little bit of a chat about it to get it off their chest. I really do think it is important that we talk about sex. And if it's not the parents talking to the kids, that's okay. But we need to talk about it. Those kids need someone to talk to.
That's true. I also think that it needs to be pointed out that I have never stumbled on an image or a video on the internet. Yeah. And I have, there's no safe searches on here. There's no net nannies. I have never stumbled upon anything I wasn't expecting ever. And neither has anyone I know really, or any of my, or my children, right? So this idea and this fear that if they have unfettered access to the internet, which they have, you know, kids are smart, they're wily, they can work around anything, absolutely anything. That it's actually quite hard to stumble upon these images. And most kids who come across, or adults who come across freaky images, do not have averse responses to them. They may, but most don't. What it does is it goes, that's not for me.
Yeah.
In the same way that you look into a fashion catalogue and go, yes, yes, that's not me. You know, music, yes, yes, that's not me. You know, a menu in a restaurant, yes, yes, that's not me. Books the same.
Yeah. And a lot of youngsters don't necessarily have that self-awareness in place yet, that they actually don't know what's them and what's not them, and that while they're still trying to find their feet and find their place in the world, that sometimes they can be confronted with images and think, am I expected to do that? I don't want to do that.
Yeah, it is.
And that can be a problem for them.
Yeah, it can be terrible. So I remember reading about this research that was done on arousal, straight men, straight women, gay men, gay women, and they were all hooked up to all of these little receptors all over their faces, you know, the ones with the round plastic stickers and electrodes and stuff, and all through them, and also on their genitals. So they had things that were monitoring the amount of moisture, the amount of heat, the amount of movement. And they were watching images and videos of different sexual acts, and they were asked to tick on their little sheet of paper if they found it, you know, arousing, not arousing, disgusting, offensive, or whatever. What was interesting is when they collated all of this information, the straight men, gay women generally, what they ticked in the boxes responded to the amount of arousal that was picked up by the electrodes and the thermometers and the moisture detectors and stuff. But with straight women, it was huge distance apart. They would be looking, I don't know, at footage of a woman being shagged by a dog and would write, you know, disgusting, not aroused, offensive on the sheet, yet their body was going, I love it, I love it, I find it really arousing. So I find it fascinating, the huge distance between the intellect and the emotional or the physical, that we might actually like some things, our body might like them, our emotions might like them, our, you know, our psyche might like them, but our intellect might want us to be very honest about it for, you know, reasons of it's icky, it's shameful, it's not right. We need to break those down, I reckon. Okay, we're going to finish off. I'd like to thank Cindy Darnell for joining us again. This is our sixth of six podcasts. Let's talk about sex. Please put on the comments below this podcast any suggestions of good porn websites that you think are authentic and interesting and not mainstream, not run-of-the-mill.
And if you like it, why you like it? What is it that you like about it?
Not you porn or RedTube, something other than that, because we'd love to share it with other people so that perhaps that they can find something to get into the best possible place with the least amount of damage and share it with the ones they love around them. So we hope you don't die and we hope you get laid.
Come on.
Let's talk about sex, baby.
Audio production by Anthony Artman. Artsystems@gmail.com.